For those who have put off the necessary steps of consciousness and have repeatedly postponed important personal decisions until tomorrow, the dying process will be quicker than for those who have put off the necessary steps of consciousness and have repeatedly postponed important personal decisions until tomorrow. They will then have to deal with this in the dying process, and this state will last accordingly longer. This has nothing to do with punishment, but rather with knowledge that should be brought to consciousness so that one can continue to grow and make peace with oneself. The dying phases. The phases described below, also known from psychology, are not just limited to physical dying. Strictly speaking, one goes through these phases again and again in a variety of life situations. For example, in times of grief or when one has to say goodbye to something. After a long-term relationship as well as after losing a job that one did with joy. These so-called dying phases can also be referred to as detachment phases. One could actually avoid these phases by directly accepting a suddenly seemingly incomprehensible situation. This in turn requires complete trust in life and the knowledge that everything in life ultimately happens for your own good, even if it doesn't seem that way at first. Being able to see and accept life like this is a long process and not yet feasible for most people. You can't construct this attitude because you think it makes sense. It is only possible through deep faith and unshakable trust. Ultimately, extreme situations show whether you really think that way or not, because then at the latest your true attitude to life comes to light. So here are the dying or detachment phases. 1. Phase of denial. No, not me is a classic phrase for people who are in this phase. When they talk about their illness or their current situation, it is as if they were talking about a third person. It is an avoidance of dealing with the new, difficult situation. 2. Phase of rebellion and aggression. Why me? Is a typical phrase that expresses anger about the personal situation. People who find themselves in this situation are angry and are at odds with God and the world. It is not easy for relatives to cope with people in this phase, because everything they do for the sick person is not seen or disregarded during this time. The patient only feels his anger and at the same time feels as a victim. 3rd phase of negotiation. It does affect me, but are classic negotiation strategies to find a way out of the personal tragedy. The affected person makes passionate plans for the future, but massively overestimates his physical and mental capabilities. These are often acts of desperation, which is also clearly noticeable for relatives. 4th phase of depression. I am powerless and don't know what to do. Are feelings that people express in this phase in a variety of ways. They direct all their life energy against themselves instead of using it constructively to improve their condition. They are solely the victim, which makes it very difficult for relatives to deal with them, because the path to resignation is not far away. 5th phase of acceptance. If the affected person has reached this phase, this is what makes it possible to move forward. The personal situation is now accepted, and everything important has been said. You can now live in the present and have made peace with your soul. Now everything is possible. Most of the time you go through these stages chronologically, but it can also happen that you barely notice one of them or that you keep jumping back and forth between two. The key thing is that you should reach acceptance at some point, otherwise you can't move on. You remain in this process until the last healing step has been taken. So it can happen that you spend more time on one phase than the other. It simply depends on the situation you are dealing with and how existential it is for the person concerned. 6. The dying process from the soul's perspective. The soul's perspective is also very important for a comprehensive and complete picture of dying and death. The soul knows the entire life plan and thus has a strong influence on the actual decisions. You can imagine this soul plan as a contract that states what you have planned for this life. People often don't consciously remember it, but instead accidentally find themselves in situations in which they can learn exactly what they had planned. That is why the soul must give its consent for a person's physical death to occur. If the soul is not yet ready, the person will not die, even though relatives have already expected it. Conversely, this can also lead to surprising situations in which people die suddenly, even though this should not actually happen from a medical point of view. The final decision is therefore made by each soul itself, and there are even people who still have this access and therefore sense beforehand that they will soon die. Strictly speaking, the dying process can be imagined like birth, only in reverse. Both processes require a lot of energy, which is why women giving birth, just like those dying, should be given a protected framework for this path. A material body is created after it has placed itself inside the soul. It is born from the mother at some point. When dying, the body goes through this process backwards, until it stops, and is then excreted or born by the soul. The soul is therefore what remains, and after a life with a body it rejoins the spiritual world. When exactly do the body and soul separate from each other? This separation often takes place at the moment when the heart stops beating. However, there are also souls, after serious accidents for example, that have already separated from the body even though the heart is still beating. This may be because they see the state of their body and because they definitely do not want to return to it under these circumstances because it is too badly damaged. But there are also others who take time to say goodbye to their body and their life. They are still connected to the body even though the heart has stopped beating. This may also be because they have not yet realized that they have died due to a very sudden death. But it usually does not take long for this realization to occur because they are picked up and accompanied by other people who have already died. So at the latest when the soul notices someone who has already died, it begins to understand and remember what happened. Some people already perceive deceased people in the room while they are still dying. This is not a wild fantasy, but important support from the spiritual world for those who will probably soon begin their journey. You can wish for someone to pick you up when the time comes, and you can of course ask several people to do this service. Whether they come is of course up to you. Of course, it's up to them. But one thing is certain, you won't be alone in the separation process. If there are no relatives in the afterlife who could pick you up, you will be accompanied by your spiritual helper in any case. This is mostly the case with children who die, as the families are usually still alive. But children enjoy divine presence in the form of angels at this moment anyway. For them, only the best accompaniment is good enough. Good and helpful accompaniment for the dying. You should only accompany the dying and sick if you yourself are not afraid of it. Unfortunately, this is not the case for many people who deal with it every day. That's why there is so little help when a relative is dying or you have just lost someone. It is all the more important that you as a relative know roughly what is important in such a situation and what you can do yourself. Many people believe that they are powerless and that there is nothing they can do. But there are many more options than you think. An important step when a person has received a serious diagnosis and death is no longer medically ruled out is the following: you should talk to the person concerned about their fears. You can ask, "Are you now thinking about dying or death?" Many people shy away from this in such a situation, although after a bad diagnosis the sick person hardly thinks about anything other than dying. But they also don't dare to voice their fears because they don't want to worry the person concerned. In fact, you spare each other, even though everyone's thoughts revolve around the same thing. And when the person concerned has died, you blame yourself for not saying anything. It doesn't matter whether the person ultimately dies of the illness or not. Talking about fears and death is just as important for an uncomplicated dying process as it is for a possible recovery. Because negative thoughts quickly take on a life of their own and are just as detrimental to healing as they are to a peaceful dying process. It is therefore important to have conversations about death and dying, especially in such situations, as they bring relief to all parties. However, if you sense that the sick person does not want to have any conversations of this kind and vehemently rejects them, you should definitely respect this and be there for the dying person in other ways. This quickly shows that the needs of the sick person are important and clearly show in what way and with what support they need. If it is clear that it is only a matter of time before someone dies and the person concerned is aware of this, then you should at least briefly address whether they have any special wishes, for example regarding their funeral. This may sound macabre, but if you don't do this, doubts will remain after the person has died as to whether you have arranged everything according to their wishes. This can also be very troubling. The person concerned, who knows that they are dying, has already thought about it anyway, but simply does not say so out of consideration. Another, but very important, point is whether a person wants life-prolonging measures or not. Often, despite advance directives, relatives are the best way of knowing whether the dying person's wishes will be respected or not. Relatives usually wait to ask such questions until the patient is no longer conscious. Then they don't know what would have been important to the other person and what they should do. All these doubts and questions that have not been clarified beforehand do not exactly help to deal with one's own grief in this situation. On the contrary, one racks one's brains, sometimes even blames oneself and misses out on one's own important grief management. So there is a lot to be said for good and conscious support for dying people, as the whole situation, which is difficult enough for everyone involved anyway, is relieved in this way. There are a few other very helpful services that one can provide. Even if someone is unconscious or in a coma, one should speak to them as if they were conscious. Because contrary to what is often assumed, these patients notice a lot. Their physical consciousness may be switched off, but not their mental consciousness. In this stage, they perceive with their luminous senses, and some even remember specific situations later when they wake up. People can die at any time, whether they are ill or not. That is why it is important to accept death as a part of life and to live each day consciously. Declarations of love, apologies, thanking others, etc. should always be done when you feel like it and not postpone until tomorrow. Because you don't know what tomorrow will bring. That's what it means to live in the present. And you don't say to yourself afterwards, "Oh, if only I had." If you notice that there are many things that have not been said and the person you are talking about is already dying, you should tell them everything that hasn't been said for a long time. Things like, "I think what's particularly great about you is," but also, "what annoyed me," should be expressed without being reproachful. You could also say what you are particularly grateful for. In very rare cases, everything is said, even if it is just the famous three words. Some people who are dying also find it helpful to know that they are being let go. Relatives should therefore primarily represent the interests of the dying person as soon as they are no longer able to do so. A protected environment is important, but that doesn't mean that you have to sit by the bed all the time. Many relatives do this to make sure that they are there when the other person goes. So much pressure is not necessary, because dying people can shape the moment of departure as they need and want it. If they want to die alone, they simply wait until their relative leaves the room for a few minutes. Conversely, they also wait until a loved one is there and hold out until they arrive. As soon as the desired person has arrived, the heart often stops beating. Why does a person still die even though they say, "I want to live"? When you talk to dying people, the sentence "I want to get well again" is often heard. This makes it all the more incomprehensible for the relatives when this person then dies anyway. This statement has its origins in the sense of duty that the dying people feel for those left behind. Their sense of duty makes them say these words at this moment. They do not want to admit their true state and do not want to hurt their relatives. Dying people sometimes simply do not dare to say what they really think and how they really feel. The best way to find out how a person really feels about their recovery process is to perceive it emotionally. But no matter what they say, you should just be there and accompany them during this difficult time. End-of-life care is not there to satisfy your own helper syndrome. It is a service to people, regardless of whether they are family or a stranger. You should only give what is needed and be there as a discreet companion. No more, but also no less. children and death. To get a complete picture of this topic, you have to look at it from two perspectives. One side is how children themselves view death and dying. The other side is the far more difficult topic, when a child dies. It is very important to explain a few things about it so that this seemingly unbearable topic can be less serious. How do children view death and dying? In contrast to adults, children still have a very natural relationship to death. If you allow them to perceive this and it is not disturbed by the parent's excessive fear, death is a natural part of the life process for children. When children experience the death of a person or an animal, they express their grief and then quickly go back to their daily routine. The prerequisite for this is, of course, that they do not associate death with a shocking experience of their own, such as the death of a parent that they had to witness. That is why it is easy to talk to children up to the age of 6 about dying and the cycle of life. You can explain the word death to small children if they ask about it. Because children have a natural image of life after death, there is no reason for them, unlike adults, to be afraid of it. If they are afraid of something, it is at most pain or making their parents sad. Many parents are frightened when their children use words like dying and death because they are afraid for their children. But it is important to understand that it is very important for the little ones to deal with this topic, just like with other areas. For them, it is just as important as friendship or questions about why people have belly buttons. You should be aware that the way parents deal with death and dying affects the children's beliefs. It would therefore be sensible to convey as neutral a picture as possible and to answer questions that naturally arise on this topic as best as possible. If you react to these questions with irritation or fear, it will unsettle the children and they will no longer be able to deal with the topic without fear. Adults can learn a lot from children in this way. At around 4 years of age, dying and death are naturally very present for little ones, and they can already understand that this is another dimension of existence. Because their bright, physical senses are still intact, children have a different perception than most adults, and this naturally benefits them when dealing with death. When children die, most people have the idea that there is a natural sequence to death. First the grandparents, then the parents and then the children are next. However, this rule does not exist in nature. It is a human wish so that they do not have to deal with the fear of loss. Death is still a difficult subject for many, but the fact that old people die at some point is now normal in most people's minds. They have lived their lives and may have been ill. Under these conditions, death can be more or less accepted. When children die, however, you ask yourself, why? They still had everything ahead of them. That is the common way of thinking, and that is precisely where the problem lies. People say that a life has been lived meaningfully if it has a certain number of years. From a spiritual and mental point of view, however, a life plan is fulfilled when the person has fulfilled the tasks they set out to do in this life. This has nothing to do with the number of years, but with how intensively and consciously a person has lived and whether they had many items on their life list. There are children who have learned more from their short lives and achieved more than people who live to be over 80 years old. The length of a life says nothing about its quality. So you can only understand the death of children if you say goodbye to the prevailing time thinking, time equals quality of life, and only think in terms of quality of life. Sometimes less is more. Apart from that, the current life is not the first and the last, and so the soul experiences different qualities of life, of different durations. Losing a child is one of the greatest challenges that people can experience. It shakes up your entire worldview, and it is not uncommon for your own beliefs to be radically questioned. That is why it is all the more important to have the right support when you are faced with this profound experience. Losing a child has a different dimension for most people than if an older person were to pass away. The first thing that has to be dealt with is the deep shock of this personal tragedy. Many of those affected remain in this state of shock for several years because they are left to deal with the situation alone. Many doctors and medical staff are even more overwhelmed by the death of a child than they already are with the death. In most cases, unfortunately, there is no end-of-life or bereavement support, and so parents and relatives are left to fend for themselves. Even if a sudden accident is the cause of death, the police rarely provide the necessary support to deal with this shock. That would probably be asking a bit too much. That is why there are associations for bereaved parents, institutions such as Pro Familia or other private organizations that offer their help to those affected in this situation in a variety of ways. But even there is a limit to how much help can be given. In order to really accept and accept the death of the child at some point, you need a deep belief that life goes on after death and a different perspective on death. If you know that life goes on after death, you also know that the child's soul is still alive and that it is not completely lost to you. Of course, it is a farewell, because the physical connection to the child no longer exists, but the soul of the loved one can still be close to the relatives. Strictly speaking, it is a temporary farewell, because at the latest when you yourself die, you meet again on a soul level. Now there are parents who suffer so much from the loss of the child that they do everything they can to enter the spiritual world themselves as quickly as possible. But this calculation does not work because, on the one hand, they forget their own tasks for which they came into this world and, on the other hand, they would hurt many others who still urgently need them, if, for example, there are other siblings or grandchildren. In addition, by committing suicide, one places oneself in a different place on the spiritual plane than the soul of the deceased child. This means that the desire to meet the child again is not fulfilled. The death of children shows how authentic the inner strength really is and the quality of the relationship between the parents. Over 60% of couples who have lost children separate after a foreseeable period of time. It shows how close you really are or whether there was already something wrong before the tragedy. Other relationships gain strength, the spouses grow closer and give each other support and stability. When counseling someone in grief, the sentence is often heard, "You finally have to let go of your child." Unfortunately, this statement achieves the opposite, because for many people the word let go means something like forgetting, erasing. This idea is sheer horror for relatives who have lost a loved one. The basic idea is not wrong, but you should express yourself differently so that this serious misunderstanding does not arise. It would be much more important for all those who are grieving to eventually reach a state of acceptance, which does not mean forgetting or approving of what happened. You should simply accept at some point that the soul of the deceased gave its consent at that time of death. It is as if the loved one or the beloved child decided that they wanted to find happiness far away from their loved ones abroad. If you love someone, you inevitably have to let them go, even if it hurts. But love wants to see the other person happy and therefore has to accept decisions that change your own life. The death of a child is hardest for those who made their children the only purpose in life. If you have other things in life besides children, these are precisely what give you support in such a difficult phase. If you don't have them, you fall into the abyss because the only purpose in life that you had up to now is now gone. Then it is important to ask yourself what other things there could be that are worth living for. If affected parents and relatives are certain that the child's soul still exists and even receive proof of this from a reputable medium, this is a very good basis for coping with the farewell to the child. It remains a possibility to have a connection with each other, and this helps immensely in being able to concentrate on one's own life again. It is as if the child is far away abroad and you at least talk on the phone now and then to find out how the other is doing. This certainty helps to understand and process the difficult fact of loss. Losing a child is not a punishment, as many believe, but a huge challenge for everyone involved, which has to do with unconditional love and personal growth. From the children's point of view, their own death is actually nothing to be afraid of. However, there are circumstances that frighten the child and make them feel insecure. Most children who are seriously ill feel guilty towards their parents and other family members. They feel guilty and responsible for causing others so much grief and work. They are afraid that they will make their parents even more unhappy if they die. Sometimes they take on the parents' fear and believe it is their own. A child up to the age of 6 is not afraid of what happens after death, but only of the circumstances and of what their death will do to their parents. If parents have the courage to talk to their child about their own and their own fears, they will be amazed at what the little ones think about death. It is not uncommon for children to help their parents with their statements rather than the other way around. It is also helpful for dying children if relatives bring guardian angels into play, because children do not find this idea as absurd as most adults. It is therefore very important to make it clear to children that they do not need to feel guilty, but that their parents are aware that they are not so ill on purpose. Every grieving process has its own time and quality, and that is why there is no rule as to when you should be finished grieving. It is simply the case that some days you are sad and other days you can be very happy. All facets are part of life, even when you have to master the difficult challenge of having lost a child. I have already been able to accompany many parents and children in this difficult task, and one thing always strikes me. The parents and relatives need much more support during this time than the children. Do parents use spiritual contact with the deceased after their death? If you have children, they have a very good chance of being able to lead a more or less normal life again. If these people lack this perspective, everything remains dark and sad, and it is incredibly difficult for them to continue to manage their own lives. They have no hope anymore, and that is probably the worst thing a person can feel, hopelessness. I try to give this help through my work and am happy every time I see parents of deceased children laughing heartily. Because that is what is good for the children's souls in the spiritual world and brightens them up. Phenomena in the dying. Certain situations keep occurring that people report when a relative has died. The most important ones should be mentioned so that knowledge of these phenomena reduces fear and uncertainty. It is very irritating when a normal person suddenly has spiritual apparitions or other perceptions. The first thought that comes to mind is, I'm probably going crazy now. You're embarrassed to tell others because you're afraid of being seen as crazy. So you prefer to deal with it on your own and try to find a way to classify these experiences. The majority of people experience such phenomena, but because hardly anyone talks about it, everyone thinks they're the only one with such experiences. The most common phenomena that can be observed around death are the following. People suddenly tidy up important things and meticulously sort documents, provided they are still physically able to do so. Relatives see the person who announces their imminent death and says goodbye in their dreams. Relatives see the deceased as a white figure standing in front of their bed. Dying people report that people who have already died and who were once close to them have appeared to them. Pets change their usual behavior in a noticeable way. The doorbell rings even though there is no one at the door. Clocks stop exactly at the time of death. There are, of course, other means and ways in which dying people can make it clear that they are about to start their journey or that they can say goodbye, but that would take us too far. It is important to know that there are many such phenomena and that they occur more frequently than most people believe. Even when people have died, they can make themselves known in a variety of ways, as already described. If this spiritual form of contact scares you, you should tell the dying or deceased person to hold back because their behavior triggers fear in you. Since the deceased have no evil intentions and usually just want to let the relatives know that they are okay, it is enough to formulate your request mentally. Otherwise, these experiences serve to ensure that the soul lives on and that there can still be a connection between the bereaved and the relatives. This has nothing to do with being crazy, but simply with natural perception. You are only schizophrenic or something similar when you can no longer distinguish between the reality in the afterlife and the reality in this world. You should not give too much importance to the phenomena from the spiritual level, however. They are a part of our existence, just as material, logical life is. A healthy measure is appropriate. near-death experiences. Opinions are still divided on the existence of these experiences. Medicine says that these experiences arise from nerve cells that go crazy and therefore produce certain images. What is strange, however, is that people who have had near-death experiences can describe being in certain rooms or having conversations that occurred during the period of their unconsciousness.